listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, live, live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, August 2nd already. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, Michael. As always, I'm glad to be here. And August. It is August 2023. Crazy. Time flies.
It does. It does so fast. Welcome to those that have joined us live in the chat. We always look forward to seeing you, and we appreciate you. And also, a big thank you to those that listen in the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. And, of course, we're going to begin with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are, 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8, metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So, very much looking forward to tonight's topic, spirits, ghosts, and the paranormal. And Dr. Vicki, you know, just talking with you before we went live, I know that you have, you know, some things that you kind of want to launch off with.
Well, a pet peeve to start with.
That's a good one,
I guess. Well, there are many more programs out on ghost hunting, the paranormal, psychic investigations, and I want to make this clear. I don't watch them. I catch little ads or little bits, and I, you know, say kind of what's going on out there. It is so embellished, over-dramatized, with very, I don't know. Yeah, they're using more tools and more investigative tools and cameras and audio. And, you know, they got all their stuff. And Dr. Kelly knows that better than anybody. But taking little things and blowing them out of proportion. And what that does to people, it fear-mongers. In a way, because you have to have that excitement to get your listenership or your viewership and, you know, oh, did you see that? You know, and the screaming. And it's just a pet peeve of mine, because anybody who's truly serious about it isn't going to respond that way, it's, at least unless it's for television. So the aftermath of that is people become frightened. And that kind of by osmosis carries on with other people. And I know I had an old friend of mine pass through town with her daughters, and they're teenagers now. I haven't seen them since they were little. And the one girl was saying, oh, I'm so scared of spirits. I don't want to see any ghosts. And I said, why? Like, did one ever do anything to you? You know? Well, but it's so scary. I said, no. I don't think it's scary at all. They're like people. Mm-hmm. You don't like them, tell them to go away. And she looked at me. I said, I don't think it's a big deal. I kind of like spirits better than I like most people I meet. And, oh, and she kind of tilted her head, and I said, if you're afraid, that's going to blow up in your mind. And I said, to me, absolutely nothing to be afraid of. You know, if you don't like it, just ignore it or, you know, find another way. But when you emotionally react, that is, that's perpetuating a fear and, you know, causing you your own distress. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I felt about that. But true. A lot of that comes from television.
Yeah, I was about to say. And it's the, I would say it's the entertainment value of fear. And ultimately, people like to be scared. I think, you know, with this girl, it could have been a mix of these cultural influences, television shows, all of the media that you were talking about, and the shows devoted to it. But, you know, it's also the horror movies and suspense thrillers. You know, we like being scared in certain situations.
Horror movies, that's a whole industry in itself.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
But I feel that, you know, to take this conversation in another way, because we've talked about, you know, spirits and such before, you know, and what we call ghosts, if you will. But to kind of have another kind of take on it is you can detect them in various ways. It can be a sense. It could be a smell. It could be of, you know, a feeling that you have. It doesn't mean you actually have to see them. And a lot of people feel like, well, if I don't see them, then it's not real. Because that's where we like verification of everything, you know. We like the concrete evidence.
And it is nice. I mean, and it's things that can become verifiable. And I think, ultimately, we do want to be on a quest where we can point to something that that can be universally seen.
Well, sure. I mean, I recently watched a video of some investigators about Sasquatch. And apparently on this video is where it slowly disappeared, like going into the ethers. And then they got having the conversation about maybe what the indigenous people is true. They travel through portals. And I found that kind of interesting. What I didn't appreciate was the conversation about it and this high-strung, you know, excitement and emotion, and, you know, they took it from what could have been a more scientific kind of discussion into this emotional, do you believe what you just saw? I can't believe it. Oh, my God. You know, look, and it just kind of lost its edge. And I think that's what people do. They want to, and look, we're on the cutting edge of so much science now. And it's even if you watch Skinwalker's Ranch, you know, and they're shooting up the, you know, their little missiles. And they know now that there is something, some kind of a dome that has a different frequency because they shot up from the ground as well as from the sky. And they can see now that there's a different frequency of energy happening. I appreciate that, but don't get me wrong. That's still in... In all of the footage, there is the dramatization, you know, mm-hmm. And they get excited. But that there's a reason for that, so that people find that more appealing because it excites us.
Well, and ultimately, I
appreciate the calmer kind of approach to it.
I was just going to say, you know, ultimately, when it comes to these programs, we have to know that, I mean, for whatever information they can offer, the ultimate goal is entertainment. And it's a money-making endeavor, which, you know, I don't say that as a bad thing necessarily. It is. And, you know, they need eyeballs. They need to be able to sell advertising space or streaming subscription or what have you. So they have a vested interest in making it entertaining. And Dr. Ione had mentioned on these programs, I'm guessing kind of like ghost hunter type programs, where they're playing some kind of background music, probably some kind of tense music, and you can only hear what they think they might have heard when they're, you know, kind of listening on that night vision camera and, you know, reacting so dramatically to anything that moves.
But I've disappointed people, I'm afraid, when I, and in years past, I don't do this anymore, but in years past, when somebody said, something's in my house, can you come and smudge the house? And I would go and I kind of, who's here kind of thing. I don't react in the way they expect. I say, oh, yeah, I feel that there's a little girl here running around and You know, I shrug my shoulders and, oh, and they're so excited. And they look at me like I'm supposed to get excited with them. And I say, I think it's cool. Like, she's not hurting anybody. What's the problem?
Mm-hmm. You know?
And yeah, but what does she want? Nothing. Like, and I can kind of tune in often, not always, about whether it's a grounded spirit, you know, a visiting spirit. And, you know, but again, they don't get the reaction from me that they're looking for. I was living on a farm in Alberta before I moved out here to BC. And I mean, when I tell you it was standing room only for spirits, Michael, I'm not kidding you. And it turns out that the farmer's field used to be a cemetery. Mm-hmm. And they moved the cemetery, but left a few bodies that nobody claimed. And often wondered about that. Like, so I finally learned the stories about this place. But I could feel them and see them walking in the field a lot of the time. And I had somebody come and farm sit for me. And this boyfriend of a girl I knew, and he wanted a break, so come out and sit for me for a few days. Well, he even left before I got home because he said, that is the freakiest place. You know, you have spirits walking all over the place. I said, what's the big deal? It's too freaky. And he's really upset that I didn't warn him about these spirits because he never would have come. Like, and I'm going, this is kind of crazy.
I mean, we may have talked about this before, but I think a good chunk of that fear comes in the lack of ability to, you know, you don't feel like you can control it. You know, so a physical person walks in your house, you can grab them and throw them out. But you can't grab a spirit per se. Of course, they can't hurt you. You know, anything that we know says that, you know, a spirit can only do what you allow them.
But, well, that's true. But the other thing I wouldn't have thought to say, oh, by the way, there's a field full of spirits here. Because I'm living next door to an old cemetery. It didn't occur to me that somebody else would tune into that and I'd have to even have that consideration.
Well, what about these spirits that are making long, you know, well, we don't have long distance anymore. No. Back in the day, you know, making long distance calls and, you know, eating all the food in the fridge and taking long hot showers. I mean, these spirits can just run up your power bill.
There was in that neighborhood, because I was not far from town, but I would pass by this one very old house all the time. And I'd always see a spirit woman in the window. And one day I went home and she happened to like fly into my airspace and having a talk with me about who she was, gave me her name. And I that was kind of unusual for me too. I wrote it down and she said, how do I get out of here? Like, how do I leave? And I don't know. Like, I have to say, I don't know. But I did look her up. And in fact, she was one of the spirits of that field that was moved to a different cemetery, and I actually found her grave. Mm. And that was another little trippy experience for me. And but I don't know. You know, helping spirits move along or up and over, to me, it's kind of tricky because they have to figure it out for themselves in a lot of ways. To me, I don't have the knowledge or the experience or that a lot of psychics do. A lot of people say, oh, I know how to do that. Oh, good for you. I like to mind my own business and say, I think there's a light. I'm told there's a light. That's my, you know, near-death experience. And if you can let go of whatever you're hanging on to here, you know, you can go there. And that's about all I can say because it's their journey. That's mm-hmm. just my experience. And again, there's my list is long about lots of spirits. But when you can actually track down a name into a cemetery, I said, oh, that's pretty cool. You know, I thought that was a pretty cool experience. But that's, to me, rare. I really admire people who can tune into, like, helping police find missing people who are maybe deceased and go through that whole trauma and the experience of finding deceased people. I admire that. I don't have it in me to put myself through that. Because I've been there, done that, and it's torturous. Mm. in my view. And it's, you're not just, for the one thing is, if you're even the slightest bit wrong, you're no good. And so that's brutal in and of itself. But because everything comes in puzzle pieces very often, people don't understand that. But it's the human people you have to deal with and their emotions to get results. And so if some people have watched some credible investigative shows, and there's a couple out there where psychics have helped police, they have a very different attitude, and they're talking very much like I am, of how things come in puzzle pieces. And they get a vision of, and it's near this, but, you know, to actually walk through it and say, oh, voila, in the snap of the finger, it doesn't really happen that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I admire the fact that they can do that. Part of me has wished that I had it in me to do that, because it really is helping people, and yet I have to know my own limits. So that's another thing to tell people, and I think to share with others, is know where your own boundaries are and what you're comfortable with doing. Mm-hmm. In the event you do talk with spirits, or you, you know, like Jerry is saying, she's walked many earthbound spirits home to the light, and she's written about it. And it's a beautiful experience. I think that's wonderful, Jerry, and I sincerely say that. It's just not my, it's not my gig, kind of thing, and mm-hmm. it's.
Well, you help people how you can in the way that you can, and you know, knowing your limits, it's always good advice. You don't want to, you know, if it's not your field, it's not your field. And you know, I think talking about the we talked a little bit about, you know, the quality and the type and the personalities of spirits and ghosts, what they can and can't do that we know of or that we suspect. Wendy was recently listening to a podcast with a demonologist as a guest. He described experiences as a child, saying he wasn't physically hurt but tortured mentally. Mm-hmm. And asking the question, you know, would they have the ability to hurt us mentally? And, you know, what do we all think? So
everybody hear me clear. In order, like if somebody says they're casting a spell on you, there has to be something in you that belongs in the category of fear, mm-hmm. for that energy to latch onto. In other words, like attracts like in that way. It has, that energy has to have some other kind of energy to latch. That, it's as simple as that. So could somebody be mentally tortured by an outside energy? Sure, absolutely. But you'd have to have it in you, like a fear space in you to do that. Otherwise, you'd be able to kind of sort it out. But if he was a child, it's very hard as a child, because you're trying to sort through life and mm-hmm. find reality. So, sure, is that possible? Yeah, but again, some of that's fear-based. I might ask this so-called demonologist if it couldn't be something like, I know I'm going to go here, it's off topic, but kind of an alien connection of some kind. You know, an intergalactic, extraterrestrial connection that he thought was demons. And actually, Stephen Greer wrote about that years ago, that as a child, he had the experiences of them coming as witches and, you know, so on. But that's how his child brain interpreted the extraterrestrials. Now, years later, I myself had loads of experiences as a child being visited by witches and little demons and things.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't particularly like them, but of course I couldn't sort through it. Could it have been extraterrestrials in contact? Maybe. I'm not going to go there because I don't care, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I have had many experiences since of seeing, you know, the UAPs or UFOs and so on, and could there be a connection? Who knows? And that could be. But again, we have to be careful how we interpret these things based on, again, what's within us.
Well, I think it's the interpretation that's so important. You you know, just came up and you had a philosophy from a very young age that it was a non-issue to have these spirits and ghosts and what have you around you. I don't know what this demonologist or what his early work or background family stuff was. I don't know if he kind of gravitated towards these perceptions and responses of what might, whatever might have been afflicting him with that kind of lens, maybe a religious lens. I think somebody else had mentioned that. But I also think that, you know, I have to also be aware of the possibility that it had nothing to do with demons and it was his own mind torturing him. We know that to happen, spirits or no.
Yeah.
And I think we just need to consider that as a possibility. There is something I did want to segue to, just to make sure we kind of get to it. We've been talking about spirits and their personalities. We talked about positive, negative spirits and different things. You mentioned earlier, you made a comment that, you know, you like most spirits, you've known more than people. And you've also said that spirits are just people, which made me think, what is it about the transition to being a spirit or the people, entity, personalities that could become a ghost, if you will, as opposed to others?
That's a really good question. I think that there's a lot of tormented people, and when they die, they're tormented souls. Until, again, I only have theories and conjectures of what transitions there are, you know, after one dies. I think there's varying layers of consciousness and evolution. But I think if somebody thinks there's like this dark spirit, that was from a dark individual, you know, and that's how I see it. And I don't have time for that in my life.
You know, I think I also want to touch on a comment in chat from Tabitha saying that she was recently told she has a spirit following her most likely her whole life, a spirit feeding off of her energy like a vampire, causing negative emotions, thoughts. She's not sure that she believes that, but it would be nice to think that all the negative talk isn't just self-talk. What is your thought on that, Dr. Vicky?
Well, I think whoever told you that's out of their mind, and they had no business telling you that. That's what I think. I think somebody saying to you, you have this dark spirit sucking your energy like a vampire, is... I think there's something twisted behind that motivation myself, because why would you do that to anybody? So is it possible? Do I believe that? Let me say for a moment, and hypothetically, because I don't believe that about you, Tabitha, so that's for one. But let's say hypothetically, there was a spirit around you and kind of trying to suck your energy. It could be somebody just trying to get your attention, and that's how somebody observed it and interpreted it. So in my view, I would be more inclined to say there's a spirit trying to get your attention. And if it's been for your whole life, like this individual told you, I'd say your spirit guide has been trying to get your attention your whole life and wants you to acknowledge them. Duh. That would make way more sense to me than somebody saying this is causing all your negative emotions and thoughts. Mm-hmm. Because if you get connected to your spirit guide, and I believe everybody watches spirits, that's, you know, guides or otherwise, whatever you call them, like it's being acknowledging of them and fewer negative emotions and thoughts. It's like coming home to yourself, receiving your own spirit, becoming more intact with yourself. And then there you get a clarity of mind of what other kind of energy is around. So let's say for a second that whoever told you this, Tabitha, is right, and I'm the one out to lunch here. I would say light some sweetgrass sage and tell them to, you know what, using very profound language and be done with it. Clear your energy and say, I want no more of this.
And take your power back.
Exactly.
If there's a situation, you have ultimate control, and you have ultimate control in what you believe and how you believe it and how you assert yourself. And I'll also say, whether in the grand scheme of the vast universe and the vastness of possibility, really anything is possible, and we can't say that it's not, you know, but also you don't have to have a spirit to, you know, have negative thoughts and negative self-talk. I think that's very common. I know that that's something that I've struggled with at times in my life, more so than others. I know that it's something that my friends and people that I've spoken with have struggled with. And yeah, we like to think of ourselves and our soul almost as a singular entity. And I mean, I guess it is, but it's also something made up of many different impulses, many different drives, all of these things within us competing for, you know, the action. And I've often thought of, you know, those especially negative voices as a particular part of the personality and something that really needs to be addressed, because it is something that we can control through focused behaviors, focused self-talk, and really kind of, especially for a while, policing how we talk to ourselves internally in our own internal monologue. But
well, to be clear, do I believe there's dark energy and dark spirits? Sure. Why wouldn't I if I believe there's dark people? Mm-hmm. You know, it's the way we deal with that. And we are not a society that is one of empowerment. Yeah, we've gone way too far in the self-esteem to narcissism, but we haven't done the build you up and who are you? You know, and I know it's been written in the chat here, the influences of the Christian church and any other dogmatic religions for that matter. And, you know, so there's all these things kind of poking at our psyches and, you know, that we're supposed to be afraid of things.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the only thing that I ever needed to embrace was the dark side of me. And when I stop being afraid of myself, because we all have a dark side, and knowing that I'm the manager of me, it just opened a whole new world. So to me, it's about self-empowerment and knowing that, okay, so there's dark energies around. So? What?
You don't give it that power.
Exactly. You just say, so what? And you create boundaries with those energies the same way you would with people. Are you on your own journey of learning about, you know, people and, again, our own evolution? Absolutely. And the same way with the spirit world. So I say, honestly, whatever. First of all, let's kind of back up here for a minute, Michael. In the event you feel like you have connections with other energy sources, ask them who they are. Is there something we can talk about? You know, and if they won't talk to you or you can't get a response, move on with your day. You know, mm-hmm. Just move on. And maybe tomorrow will be a different thing. You know, as a matter of fact, I went to visit a friend last week. We were outside on the deck, and I swear I saw a woman over there by the garage door. And I looked at her and I said, had any visitors lately? She said, you know, come to think of it, I keep hearing a woman's voice saying, hello, are you there? And I keep saying, yes, hello. Nobody's answering me. I said, I swear I saw a woman over there a minute ago. She goes, well, that makes sense. But who is she? I don't know. She didn't stop to talk to me. She just kind of moved on. We as individuals want a beginning, a middle, and an end. We want a conclusion. We want an absolute. We want to know what it is right now. And some things are just fleeting. Mm-hmm. And it's part of our own evolution and part of theirs. And if we can just make that a free flow, your energy or your senses will begin to grow and open up and know what's important and what's not important. And it's, like I said, I don't have to be on a crusade here to, you know, fix spirits and fix people. And it's, again, understanding the nine principles of belief and understanding the universal laws of non-interference. And it's a whole list of them.
Mm-hmm.
And just approach it in a calm, sensible way, understanding yourself better. It's not about understanding spirits, because they're always there. And if you understand spirits are always there, you're understanding yourself. And then a whole new world will open up.
You know,
that was quite a speech, wasn't it?
It was a good one. It was an excellent one. And I think it's, you know, very, very important to emphasize these very critical, you know, ideas of being grounded, and also to not get stuck on things. One thing I'd add is, you know, we all have the desire to be a main character in our own story. We want to imagine that everything that's happening has something to do with us. When, just like you said, a lot of these things can be fleeting. The woman, the female spirit that was going through the home was not there for them, so they kept moving on. We have to also take that into account. Be careful what your assumptions are. And I'd also say, you know, to the person that, you know, said that to you, Tabitha, I be wary of especially sensationalistic or dramatic, you know, readings and statements, I would say. Because then it just, to me, feels more entertainment based than somebody that wants to, you know, that kind of that, I don't know, I think of somebody that enjoys gossip and likes the drama and likes to build on that and feeds off it. So that's just something that comes to my mind. And, you know, I think it's, you know, a lot of good points tonight, a lot of good points about, you know, being grounded and kind of realizing what's out there. The last thing that came to mind while we've been talking is how much what our superstitions, and, you know, this can be anything from spirits, ghosts, to other paranormal things that we don't know in life. Our superstitions change as our knowledge of the world around us changes. I've been listening to a historic podcast. They did one about Mount Vesuvius, the famous eruption in 79 CE, where Pompeii, you know, most famously, Herculaneum and a lot of areas of the Bay of Naples was just devastated. And they talked about this process. One interesting thing has nothing to do with our topic tonight, but this event did not happen as instantaneously as I always thought. It actually happened over a period of about a day or two, where it took that much time for everything to finally culminate and everything to be buried. But long story short, their superstitions and their paranormal was the idea that giants existed and that giants were under the earth and that, you know, were freeing themselves. That had caused the earthquakes leading up to this. And as the earth opened up, it was the giants coming and they were going to wreak havoc. And I just say that because it makes me think about the things that we humans are afraid of that we can't see. You know, how we do, you know, when we feel something, we want to have a source for it and we want to attribute it to something. And I think what we attribute it to has changed over time in a meaningful way. To me, some of the most compelling things are those that haven't really changed. A lot of the ideas of, you know, communing with spirits or things that you've talked about do seem to echo through time, where you have very similar people talking about very similar things and experiences. The other thing is, you know, for me personally, like Dr. Vicky, you, I find very compelling and very, I believable, for lack of a more eloquent term. But at the same time, when it's not experienced by me, ultimately I have to take somebody's word at it. And I'm always going to be a bit wary of that. But, that being said, I think it's important that we realize there are things that we cannot perceive, that we cannot personally experience, and we have to be open to that. So that's all I have to say about that.
Well, I'm wary also. A couple of things in the chat. Thanks for that, Michael. It was great, too, by the way. It makes total sense. Jerry asks about the difference between spirit and ghost. No, to me it's the same thing. Dr. Mike has mentioned, ultimately, the question of whether spirits exist remains a matter of personal belief and interpretation until supported by verifiable evidence. Will we ever get that evidence? Maybe through quantum mechanics, quantum physics, quantum something, perhaps.
Yeah.
And then it's still up to the interpreter of what they've seen, because it's not in this dimension of space-time. What I will say to you is what my late teacher, Frank Appleyard, would say. Science doesn't want to do this because it's very often the psychic experiences or ghostly or spiritual experiences are non-repeatable. It only ever happens once. And how do you get that? You know, there's, you know, I have to go by what I feel and what, you know, and even what Wendy has said. She's had enough experiences to have good belief in certain things. And I was always non-ordinary, even as a kid. So when things pop in my head, it didn't occur to me as a kid that I could be mentally ill or schizophrenic. I just knew that people were lying and spirits never lied to me. And they were always the good ones. And so sourcing that out, and again, knowing yourself well enough to know how your brain thinks and what is your language versus what's their energy and language, you know the difference. Oh, somebody's talking to me. It's no different than that. It's a very old saying to say you had a feeling about somebody and they just phoned you.
Yeah.
You know,
entanglement.
Yeah. And that quantum entanglement. How do we prove verifiably, repeatedly, about quantum entanglement? You can't. See, and that's the problem with science, you know, absolute science. And furthermore, scientists each have their own interpretations of what they see.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I think it's going to be a long time before.
Probably. It'll probably be when we understand the fabric of existence in a more fundamental way, where we can peel back the layers of a potential multiverse or, you know, different layers of our existence or of reality. And, you know, I keep coming back, you know, talking about, you know, spirits don't lie to you. I keep coming back to if spirits are people and they have various personalities.
Well, mine didn't.
And I was going to say, is it because when you become a ghost from this mortal life, so to speak, you have some kind of epiphany or you have a realization or wisdom is imparted? Or is it just because of your energy and what you drew? But
I don't know. Again, I can only speak for myself. I drowned when I was 5. So I crossed over and came back. And maybe that's how, again, a speculation. That's my theory. Many others I've spoken with have had near-death experiences also. So, Dr. Mike is funny. He just wrote in the chat, science does know as much as they think they know.
I think he meant doesn't, but if I had to guess. But that does bring me to another thought that I had, and I know we're getting into our card time, and I'll be quick. I don't believe in something like absolute science. Science is an ever-shifting, ever-evolving, constantly changing thing, and science is itself just a process. It's a method. And I think it is people who are overly materialist who think, if we have not found it yet, then it does not exist. I think that's the danger. And let's not vilify science. Science is a method. And let's just say that the people who think, oh, well, we figured it out. That's it. That's, to me, the mistake. But, all right, what do you think? Is it that time?
It's that time. We've got a number of names coming up in the chat because they're mind readers. And they're ready for cards. Now, for those listening in the archives or new people to us, Michael draws a self-discovery inner oracle. Inner Oracle self-discovery card designed by Dr. Douglas Kelly himself. And I draw a support card of the tarot, and we see if there's a message.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So
we have Dr. Ione first.
Yep, Dr. Ione. And for you, I have number 4, past, present, future. The 3 universal laws of personal responsibility are, 1, you are accountable for your past, present, and future. 2, don't expect others to do for you what you can and should do for yourself. 3, don't do for others what they can and should do for themselves. Remember, present circumstances reflect past choices. Embrace responsibility and move forward with renewed vigor.
Well, what I appreciate about the 7 of Pentacles or the 7 of Diamonds, Ione, with past, present, future, is maybe take inventory of all that you have accomplished. And all that you do have. And I think we all have a tendency to think we're falling short in some regard. But if we take inventory to say, you know what, I've rolled out a good deck here and I've overcome a lot of challenges and I'm good, and reap the benefits of that feeling for a moment before you move on. So it's not what you don't have, it's what you do have and how you can move forward with that positive as opposed to the negative. I don't know where that comes from. It's just a message of the moment.
It's a good message. Good message. A lot of times I think I could, do better if I personally had a full deck. I just was thinking about that. You said a good deck.
By the way, moving right. For those who are listening, Of the minor arcana, 52 of those cards correlate with a regular deck of playing cards, which I can read a regular deck of playing cards as well. So I always say, whether it's a diamond, a club, a spade, or a heart, which, you know, I think you caught on to that, but just know there's a correlation.
Good point.
So we have Dr. Deb next. Glad to see you here, Deb.
Always a pleasure. Dr. Deb, you have wild card number 4, Unknowable. There are mysteries in the universe. Not all can be known or predicted. A focus of deliberate intent can reveal valuable unforeseen knowledge for what lay ahead. Remember, we only see what we know and believe. The universe is unfolding in ways that are unknowable to your existing ways of thinking. Change your mind and you change your world. Change your mind and what was once unknowable may now be knowable. Listen to the subtle leadings and incitations of your higher self. What was once unknowable is now knowable. Remain flexible and open to change. Good card, and kind of reflects what we've been talking about.
Well, and a holy cow on this one, Deb. You got the Chariot in support of that. So for those who don't know, Dr. Deb has, and I'm sure she doesn't mind me saying this, has been through a round of cancer, chemo, come out the other side. Congratulations. So we know that you're at this pivotal shift in your life. Deb, the unknowable, what's next? This is reminding you to take charge. If learning anything through all of this is that empowerment and that belief in yourself. So in the event there are others trying to keep you as you were, the Deb they knew before, it's that shift of I'm different, and kind of informing others, you know, of who you are not anymore, kind of thing. And the Chariot is going forward. You know, you got a negative and positive in both hands, and you're not letting anything in your way. So, but I do sense that little bit of, you know, when people change, others around say, oh, that's really great, but what's in it for me? How does that affect my life? You know, and you got to work with that. And I always say, kind of inform people in a good way of your changes as you go. And maybe some reassurance to you, it doesn't change them. It just changed the dynamic. I hope that makes some sense to you, Deb.
All right.
We have Jerry next.
Jerry, for you, I have wild card number 9, blank. Drawing this card puts you on notice to dig deep within for the answers you seek. This card is what you want it to be. It is what you need it to be. It is all that you desire it to be. Remember that the unconscious mind speaks to you in the quietest of voices, in the loudest of ways, often overlooked. The universe is always on your side. Dig deep, for your answers lay within.
Well, you know, we have past, present, future, unknowable, the blank card. These are powerful messages, Michael. They're symbols that are, you know, anything. So for Jerry, you got the blank card. It's one of my favorites. I know a lot of people like to know what's coming. I kind of thrive on not knowing myself. And so, but you have the Emperor in support of that. Now, you know a little bit about readings and cards, Jerry. So in my interpretation of this, you have an ally. And it's be ready to step into an unknown kind of energy, something unfamiliar, but that you do have an ally. So I'm going to say to you, trust your instincts, your intuition, all those good feelings. Know where some boundaries may or may not be, and move forward with someone. It could be in a business capacity or somebody who opens a door for you.
Mm-hmm.
I say go for it.
And our card keeper, Wendy, pointed out that that Deb had this card last week. That's a fast repeat right there.
Ooh, there you go.
All right. So I believe that we have Michael next. Michael G., and I think I know which Michael you are, but I won't guess.
Yep.
I have another 9 for you. Number 9, empowerment. This is in the Life Leadership Paragon suit. Taking your power back is literally all-powerful and absolutely priceless. It alone is the solution in principle for virtually every problematic circumstance in your life, from a bad relationship to spiritual harassment. Retaining your power means to retain your wholeness. When you are whole, you are empowered. Empower others by doing no harm and doing right. Sharing the best of yourself is encouraging and uplifting to yourself and others.
You know, I got the Seven of Spades here, and a little story comes to mind, Michael. And again, I'm just drawing a parallel. I'm not saying it's like this, but it's a parallel in a way. I was working at the emergency department the other day as patient ambassador. One of our coworkers was going through emergency. And so I said, you know, come sit here beside me. She goes, oh, I can't sit here. You know, what if the boss sees me? I'm going to get in trouble. And I said, I don't think so, but so what? Yeah, but I don't want anybody scolding me. I said, and what are they going to do about it? And I realized in that moment that there was a tiny little bit of insecurity or a kind of a fear. And so that's why I want to draw the parallel here, because empowerment is overcoming all those tiny little, I always see them as like a pincushion. You got to pull that sucker out, you know, that one little porcupine quill that's kind of irritating your self-empowerment. And the Seven of Spades says it goes better than you expect. So if there's something here that's inhibiting you from living with no fear or living without, don't worry about what other people think, insofar as, you know, being yourself. And again, in a good way, you know, it's that kind of a situation where you think, oh, well, I don't want somebody to be mad at me. I don't want somebody to get upset with me. That's not your problem. Be you, provided it doesn't, again, the law of do no harm, do right. So if you remember that, you're going to find yourself like skyrocket in, you know, internally living from the inside out. Boy, that's a big message, Michael. I sure hope you can relate to it. So,
all right. We have Dr. Jeff next. And for you, I have number one, perfection. Always remember that you are perfect just as you are, a perfect work in progress, always changing and growing. Today is a reflection of past choices, and tomorrow is changeable by choices made today. Embrace all mistakes as they are vital to your growth while striving for a better future. Reflect to see what contributes to your perfect journey and move forward gracefully.
Well, this is the third major arcana card we picked tonight. You know, 3 out of 5. That's big. So you got the Hanged Man. Personally, that's my favorite. Perfection and Hanged Man, Jeff. Oh, I say it's truly going internally and into a place of self-acceptance, knowing yourself better, knowing your situation better, and working with yourself. So I don't know if there's been a shift in your circumstances in a way, or your I get the feeling something's changed a little bit. And you're having to reevaluate yourself. This is all part of the due course. And the Hanged Man is like going inside and finding the magic within yourself. So if there's a deficiency in one area, it amplifies goodness in another because we compensate, right? So I think it's exciting. It's just asking of you to take a minute.
Yeah. All right, good message. We have Dr. Kevin next, and for you, I have number 28, do no harm, do right. Do no harm, do right is the most powerful principle to live by. Doing no harm includes words and actions to the self and others. Doing right means to also take positive action where there is need without infringing on the free will or rights of others. Always strive for the highest good of all concerned, including yourself. Do no harm and do right establishes the foundation for all other principles.
All right, Kevin, I'm drawing a card for you. 3 of Cups. So the do no harm, do right. You know, and with that celebration, you know, 3 of Hearts, that's what that is. It's happiness, joy, celebration. It can very often mean a get-together with people, a couple of people that you know, and I don't know, kind of clicking your glasses, making a toast. But I think this is also saying not to be, and again, I mean no disrespect by this, not to be too much into yourself. It'll always allow space for other people to contribute and make their own offerings to events or situations. And that's another way of, because we inadvertently do that, we don't know we're not doing the right thing sometimes by not listening more. So if I can say anything in this way, is keep an open mind and listen, and you're going to find greater joy. That's kind of what I want to say.
Very nice. I think we should.
Say, no, yeah.
Mind
Sorry,
reader.
Michael.
Whatever. Just go ahead and steal all my ideas.
Thank you for the feedback in the chat. Again, when things come to me in a story, and know this for yourselves, when you're getting little messages for yourselves, everybody, it's go to that place that there's nothing in it for you. In other words, when I'm saying this, I'm not attached to it. I'm neutral. There's nothing in it for me. I just want to make sure I say things in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not emotionally attached to the outcome. That's when we screw up.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done it myself. I know it very well. And we can't see everything. There's, you know, I have a very dear friend of mine whose husband is dying of cancer right now. Mm-hmm. I did not see that coming. I read for her early in the year and I said, I see a funeral this year, but you're going to be okay. I didn't think it would be your husband. And I have anguished about that a little bit. Could I have maybe clued into this earlier where maybe he could have gotten treatment? I know he had long haul COVID. Mm-hmm. He was under a doctor's care, so I kept my nose out of it.
Well,
and again, sometimes we're not supposed to know everything.
Yeah.
So,
and also,
we don't always get it.
I think that you've pointed out very well that the popular conception that psychics just see everything in the future and can read it like a book is absolutely wrong. You know, you hear the common joke that if you're a psychic, why haven't you won the lottery, or, you know, something to do with gambling, etc. But no, you're absolutely right. And just, you know, I really appreciate the feedback too, guys, because, you know, Jerry mentioned she has a wonderful opportunity coming up regarding reading, oracle readings, things like that. Michael G is going through a tough time and really appreciates how the cards speak to him. And I just want to also say, you know, that's one thing I love about this community. You know, we're here for you, wishing you the very best. And I just thank you for sharing. But all right, moving along, we have Tabitha next. Oh, did you have something else you were going to say?
No, you just said it perfectly.
Thank That's because we keep saying the same thing all the time. No. But Tabitha, for you, I have number one. It's a wild card, number one, paradox. A truth can be found in seemingly contradictory ideas. What may seem like a false proposition can be a set of new ideas and ways of thinking. Your solution may lay in the opposite direction than you think. Keep in mind that the cosmos works in equals and opposites. Not all truths lay in common opinions. This may be a time for contrarian thinking and opening your mind to what may not make sense at first, and thus new perspectives are discovered. I promise you, despite evidence to the contrary, I can read. Also, I think it's interesting that I'm pretty sure that for every wild card we pulled tonight, we pulled the corresponding number in the normal deck. Just a little interesting thing there.
It's wild. I got the Four of Clubs. Ordinarily, I see this, Tabitha, as promises, commitment. When I'm reading in the tarot, I usually see it as the only marriage card if it's going to show up. But marriage can be many things, right? It can mean a business partnership. It can mean just a promise to a relationship, to a friend. Again, it can mean a lot of different things. In this case, paradox, I think it's reviewing what promises are. And that's where I'm going to go with this. What is a promise? And even though it's something you might like to do, it may not be something you can do. Or it's something that you said you couldn't do, but maybe you could do. And again, that paradox, right? It's paradoxical. And you decide how much you want to be involved and how much you want to participate when someone, and again, I'm going out on a limb here, when someone comes to you to say they need help.
Good point. All right. And we have Dr. Edward next. So happy to have you with us. I have number 15, belief system knowledge base. We each operate life from an existing belief system, and sometimes the solution or direction lies outside of our belief system. Equally, when knowledge is expanded, a belief system calls for revision. Consider that opening the mind for more information and knowledge may be required, subsequently adjusting a belief system. Know that the knowledge you seek is within.
Well, I love that you got the Ten of Hearts here. So that's a Ten of Cups, Edward. Knowledge-based Ten of Hearts. I think it's a call to family, but in a really good way. So it's about getting together with family, but being able to contribute to family. Wendy says that you had this card back in the knowledge-based card back in June. So it's repeated for you. But being able to contribute to the inner workings of your life, you know, your greater sphere of influence, and to your family about some insights that you might have, sharing a little more of yourself in a different way. That's what I'm feeling here. And it puts you in a different light in the eyes of others. You know, we have to pick our spots sometimes, you know. And I think, you know, my grandkids don't know much about me, really, because they're kids. And as they get older and I share a little more, they go, oh, like, who are you? Oh. And I think it's that kind of a thing. And mm-hmm. So if there's other people who say, no, I studied that, or I read that, or this is my experience, and just sharing more of yourself. And it brings people closer together. It's the community of family.
I like that. Very nice.
Yeah.
All right, Dr. Mike.
I'd like
to, go ahead. I'm sorry.
There we go. I just want to address, Jerry said, even if I had seen, you know, my friend's husband's death, do you or we have the right to change it for them? And, you know, of course, Wendy piped up to say she had like the same thought, or pardon me, Jerry. Then she said that, anyway, Tabitha and I get confused. This chat goes so fast.
It does.
It was...
Tabitha said, asked the original question, I think.
Okay.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm getting mixed up, too. Yeah. I think they kind of had both had the same thoughts, and I kind of see both similar posts. But, yeah, both Jerry and Tabitha had similar thoughts.
But Jerry says, would we be changing their life plan through interference? You know, this I want to address that for a second, because I can no longer predict death in a way that's absolute, not like I could 50 years ago. And keep in mind, everybody, from antibiotics to heart transplants, the expiry date has changed.
Mm.
So it's... Because, and I don't know if it's interference in that way with medical profession. I think that these things are a wonderful thing. People's lives are extended. I talked to a 90-year-old woman the other day. She said, 8 times the doctors have told my kids to get the funeral arrangements ready. But she said, I'm going to live till I'm 104. I said, yeah, just to piss them off. That's good. You know. And we had a good laugh about it. But by rights, she ought to bet. She said cancer 5 times.
Mm.
You know, so if there weren't cancer treatments, if there weren't organ transplants, if there weren't medications, if there weren't all these things, yes, I mean, how do you predict that? And I think in many ways we ought not to. I've known people in care for many years and I say, wow, they're not dead yet. You know, and I don't mean to be cruel about it, but somebody with dementia and their body's deteriorating, it's the medication keeping them alive.
Mm-hmm.
So how then, as a society, are we treating life and death? That's, mm-hmm. to me, the ultimate question.
Well, you have to keep the body alive and the spirit alive.
Mm. So it's, you know, all those questions and the non-interference, well, I have been in many situations where I've told somebody, I think you need to get your blood pressure checked. And lo and behold, they end up in for surgery, you know. And that was done in a way where I could contribute to helping them. One fellow in particular, though, got heart surgery, had the best year of his life with his wife, and then got killed in a car accident a year later. So was the day of his death marked, I can't tell you except that, you know, I've seen so many strange things and it's very hard to figure out. And could I have made an impact in this friend's husband's life? I don't know. And I have to live with just accepting that it was his time.
Mm-hmm.
He had doctors. He had other care. They didn't see it. Could I have made a difference? Maybe, but maybe I'm not supposed to.
Yeah. And
maybe there's some things we're not supposed to see.
I think that's probably the truth, you know? Makes me think of a time travel sci-fi show where they have to go back and, you know, make sure this horrible thing happens because it sets off a chain of events that leads to something really great. But, you know, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to tell you that I can, you know, predict when we die. And I'm going to say that everybody living or everybody listening, we're all going to get to at least 100. Except for me, I'm going to live to at least 150. But I'm putting that out there.
Okay. Somebody said at work the other day, well, don't you want to live to be 85? I said, it depends, but not likely.
In my
anyway,
mind,
we have our card keeper, Wendy, as the final card tonight, Michael.
I don't know why you, apparently, I'm so sorry, Dr. Mike, I don't know what you've done to anger Dr. Vicky, so she just wanted to skip right over you. But
I'm sorry.
But I am looking out for you. So I got you, Dr. Mike. I have a card right here for you. It's number 38, open-mindedness. An open mind is sensible and grounded. An open mind avoids preconceived notions, especially ones that are based on a personal agenda, a pet theory, or a preferred belief. An open mind is not gullible or credulous. Rather, an open mind thinks critically and searches for additional possibilities. It absorbs knowledge and searches for credible solutions and conclusions.
Sure, make me feel bad, Mike. Go ahead. Dr.
Mike,
I've got another major arcana of the tarot, and it's the Empress. And that's, again, how we take this. The meaning of it is fertility, how things grow, the seeds of thought. So open-mindedness with the Empress, like, oh, that's powerful about coming up with new thoughts, new ideas, and stepping outside what would have been, let's say, your own formula for thinking or a new experience, for instance. So I think that you're going through a transitional period of, and we know you're open-minded, Mike. It's that this is saying, I'm going to say this. It's like there's an extra calm in you now to have a more open mind to other ideas. And ideas are starting to formulate, and it's very exciting.
I love it. All right. And by the way, our card keeper herself pointed out that Dr. Mike had that same inner oracle card on June 28th. So definitely seeing some patterns. Another interesting, numeric oddity. Wendy, you're next, and our last card for the evening. I pulled number 39 for you. It's very rare I pull cards sequentially like that. So we had 38, now we have number 39. Education. Continual education is the key to individual and collective consciousness and personal success. Commit yourself to lifelong learning, educating yourself continually. If you don't know something, first look for the answers yourself, then ask if necessary. Gain education and advice through various sources, including people, but always strive to find your own answers. Look for lessons in life experience, situations, and circumstances. Make it your adage to listen, think, learn, grow, and live.
Well, I got the Knight of Cups, Wendy, the Jack of Hearts. And in this case, yes, we are always learning, right? All of us. And you're doing your own learning. But I see this in a way of you're the educator. So you're imparting information to others. I don't know if you're building a training program or something you're going to be. I see you writing things down and taking notes, and it's something that you're going to impart to others. So I don't know if it's about policy, procedure, human resources kind of information, But it's all done in a very good way, in a very positive way, especially with the hearts there. But in this case, it is all about education. So I think you're embarking on a new little project that it's work related. That's what I think.
All right. Good message. And, we definitely started to get some repeats there. Always interesting to see. And Wendy pointed out, she heard the dogs barking. So we're back on track. You know, the ironic thing, I shouldn't be surprised, is I was just thinking to myself, you know, the dogs have been very quiet. I'm very happy about that. And then immediately regretted thinking that because, as we all know, those vengeful evil gods are telepathic and they were going to make me suffer for my pride. But
hey, Wendy just said she is writing a book. It's going on pre-order August 14th. It's fiction. I don't care that it's fiction. That's awesome.
Very cool. Very cool.
So, Wendy, can you give us some information on it so we can plug it in our next program, please?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Shoot me the information. I know that you have my Facebook Messenger, and we'll make sure to put it out there. I think you're going to have a few pre-orders. Very cool. But
I'm excited.
But, you know, it's that time of the evening. And, you know, as we start to wrap up, and it's been a great conversation, and we've covered a lot of ground tonight. We've gone a little bit long, too, so don't worry. We're going to bill everybody for the extra few minutes that we ran over. But, you know, before we wrap up this fasting discussion, I think really the core of it is being grounded, right? You know, and also hold on to your power, and if you feel like you've lost it, if you feel like a spirit or ghost has some kind of ability to inflict any kind of negativity on you, take your power back. Remember that you are in control. Now, Dr. Vicki, any last thoughts?
You know, and it's helpful to visualize a mirror facing out the other way. You see bad energy coming your way. I just put up a mirror and they can just, you can ricochet back at them and they can see themselves. It has nothing to do with me. There we go.
Well said. Well said. Well, with that, we're looking forward to seeing everybody next week. Please stay safe out there. And don't let the turkeys catch you down on top of that. Until next week. Listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.